All right, morning. Two more days to go in the discussion of Tumah Tahara. Okay. Just some basic questions in terms of why the Gemara chose at this point in time now to take a seven-day tour of Tumah Tahara. So I asked around. I mean, literally, it's something that... I understand the Mishnah speaks about it, and I do get that. But okay, but it's not the main subject of the Masechta. The main subject, of course, is Pesach, and so, you know, to ask a couple questions on the mission, that's fine. But then to get into an entire discussion for, you know, seven blot of Gemara, so it's certainly unusual, and I don't have a good explanation in terms of why the Gemara took 6 days to 7 days in, you know, Daf Yomi terminology, but seven blot of Gemara to go on to discuss. So that I'm not sure about. It only begs the question, which, you know, one of those open-ended questions, which I'm sure no one's given me a good answer for, and that is, why didn't they write Gemara on Seder Taharos? Meaning, Seder Taharos is another one of the Seder Sederim of Mishnayos, and certainly an excellent opportunity for them to write Gemara. And if you come at me with an answer of, well, it's not Lamaisa, it's not practical, so then you could start with Kachim, meaning they wrote on all of Seder Kachim, with exception to a couple of Mesechtos at the very end, but they wrote on mostly all of Seder Kachim, and that wasn't Lamaisa. So, okay. So anyway, so I discussed it with a couple of people. I don't really have a good approach in terms of why Kachim but not Taharos. And then now that they didn't run into Taharos, so why over here a six blot? So again, these are, you know, some of the larger questions which, you know, I'm just going to leave open-ended. The Gemara yesterday pointed out that there's an interesting shita within Rabbi Akiva, based on the way he darshans a pasuk, that he goes as far as the shlishi when it comes to chulin. Meaning, the generally accepted halacha is that we go in the world of chulin. You have, obviously, you start with an avatama, right? The source of tuma. Then it's metame something, which means that is a vlad. It now becomes a rishon. And when that rishon now touches food, the food's the sheni. And in the world of chulin, that's it. The buck stops at a sheni. So in other words, by chulin, if I have chulin food touching any other food, there's no transmission of tuma because it stops at a sheni. Then when you get to Truma, so Truma has more Kedusha, it's more sensitive, so therefore Truma goes to a Shlishi. And then when you get to Kodesh, any carbon in the base of Mikdash, so now it has even more Kedusha and more sensitivity, and therefore it could become even a Revi. So that's accepted Halacha, that's a generally accepted Halacha, that for Chulin Sheni, for Truma Shlishi, and for Kachim it's a Revi. Then Rabbi Akiva starts off with the shita, which we were introduced to in yesterday's daf, which is that by chulin could go to a shlishi. So that by chulin it can go now, start with an avatuma, touch a kli, which is a rishon, touch food, which is a sheni, and that food touches another food, and that's going to be a shlishi. He bases it on a way he darshens a pasuk. The pasuk says yitma. Yitma he understands to mean yitame. Okay, so that is shita's Rabbi Akiva. Fine. So the Gemara now is going to point out that despite the fact that there's a relationship between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi, and the relationship is such that Rabbi Kiva was a Rebbe to Rabbi Yossi. Remember, Rabbi Kiva started off with thousands of students, 24,000 students, and they died, as per the Gemara in Yevamos, and he started again, right? Even though in his advanced age, he started again. He took five Talmidim. Rashi actually tells us who those five Talmidim are. Rashi was on yesterday's daf. Rabbi Meir, I'm just looking at Rashi. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. So these are the five students of the five, you know, second round students of Rabbi Akiva. So of which obviously is Rabbi Yossi. So even though Rabbi Yossi is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara now is going to note that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi don't exactly see the eye to eye in terms of this Tumah. So this is where we're going to start the Gemara today. We're going to start in Yitzchak Amud Beis. And right after the Milsi Dasle B'Kavachomer talk for Kutzal V'Kra. Amalei Ravina L'Rav Ashi. V'Hama Rava L'Rav Yossi Savakar Rabbi Akiva L'Rabbi Akiva Savakar Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, look, even though it's a Rebbe Talmud relationship, but they don't exactly see eye to eye. Rabbi Akiva does not hold like Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi does not hold like Rabbi Akiva. So Amalei Rabbi Yossi B'Shitas Rabbi Akiva Rabbo Amro V'Leilo Svirole. So again, the Gemara says that's a little bit strange considering the fact that Rabbi Yossi learned his Torah from Rabbi Akiva, and he doesn't hold it. So Amalei Rav Ashi L'Rav Kahana Bishlam Rav Yossi Lo Savor like Rabbi Akiva. Now the Gemara is going to go on to explain in detail how we know that they cannot see eye to eye. They see eye to eye, but in this particular halacha, there's no way that they could see eye to eye. So the Gemara says, look, D'Tanya. So the first direction we're going to go is from Rav Yossi to Rabbi Akiva, meaning Rav Yossi cannot hold like Rabbi Akiva, And how do I know that? Because of the following brisa. I'm Rav Yossi. Okay, now Rav Yossi is going to do the following. Basically, look, we know this. Again, our starting point is going to be that by chulin takes us to a sheni. And now basically what Rav Yossi is going to do is, he's going to get us to the next step and the next step, meaning truma and kachim, using methodology. He's going to use a kavachomer, he's going to use a pasuk, but in other words, he's going to use methodology to get from 2 to 3 and from 3 to 4. And the Gemara is going to note, Rabbi Akiva, there's no way that Rabbi Akiva can use the same methodology. So first what we're going to do is we're going to learn the methodology of how Rav Yossi gets from 2 to 3 and from 3 to 4. And then we're going to point out that Rabbi Akiva cannot subscribe to that. So first things first. Detanya Amar Rav Yossi minayin l'Ravi b'kodesh hu pasul. How do I know that when you get to a fourth degree or Ravi when it comes to Kodesh, that it's pasul? Remember, I explained this to you in the past. The word pasul just simply means that it's the end of the road, right? It's the cul-de-sac of Tumah. So that when something now is Tumah but cannot transfer the Tumah to anything else, so it's called a pasul. So when you get to Karbon, Ravi is pasul. So how do I know that? So the Gemara says, Vidinhu. So the Gemara says we're going to apply logic. Kavachomer. Uma mechusa kippurim shemuta b'truma. So we'll start off our kavachomer from mechusa kippurim. Now mechusa kippurim, what does that mean? There are certain people who, when they finish their tuma, still are not totally tahor until they bring a karban. Your examples, it's only a limited number of examples. A zava zava, a mitzora, and a yoledes. Right? Four examples. Now, let's go over any one of these examples. This halacha is going to basically be the same. Okay, let's go with the mitzora. Okay, so mitzora goes through a tahara process. The Torah goes in detail in terms of what the tahara process is. But basically, when you get to the end of the 7 days of the tahara process, you tovel in the mikvah, and then you wait till the evening of the eighth, the eve of the eighth, and you're good. Meaning, right, what do we say? We say that you tovel in the mikvah plus Harav Shemesh, and you're good to go. Now, good to go means what? It means that now you're basically tahor. So you can eat truma. Right? Remember, the first Mishnah in Brachos talks about the Kohanim, that after they tovel the mikvah, and after nightfall, so now they're allowed to eat truma. That's the time that you say Kriya Shema. So we generally say that tefillah plus Harav Shemesh equals tahara, generally. However, in the case of Zav, Zava, Mitzor, and Yoledes, what they need to do is bring a carbon the next day. The carbon holds them back, meaning that there's still even just a tiny residual tumah until they bring the carbon the next day. How does that residual tumah manifest? Because we know that once you tovel and once you have Harav Shemesh, you're allowed to eat truma. So how does it manifest? It manifests in a way where, although for the most part you're tahor, and although you can eat truma, you can't eat carbon. You're still prohibited from eating carbon until you bring your own carbon. So in other words, the bringing of your karban is what's called mechusar kippurim. You are deficient, you are lacking of a kapara. You don't have full atonement yet from your tumah. And so therefore, you're prohibited from eating karban until you bring your own karban. Okay. So umma mechusar kippurim shemuta b'truma. So now the starting point of the discussion is that we know mechusar kippurim is allowed to eat truma. Right. Because he toveled in the mikvah and experienced Erev Shemesh. So, pasul b'kodesh. And meanwhile, he can't eat kodesh. So now, shlishi, so we're comparing, it's a little bit strange, we're comparing people and objects. But fine. In other words, this is how the methodology is going to work. This is how the kavachomer is going to work. So if a mechusar kippurim is allowed to eat truma, but not allowed to eat karbon, shlishi, so if I have a third degree truma, shepasul b'truma, which we know, Apostles Truma, in addition, she has a Revi B'Kodesh. So for sure should affect a Revi B'Kodesh. That's the logic, that's the argument. V'laman, I'm sorry, that's the argument that gets us from 3 to 4. Fine. V'laman u'shlishi B'Kodesh min HaTorah u'Revi mikavachomer. And as far as Shlishi is concerned, meaning how do we even get to Shlishi? Meaning how do I know that Truma can become a Shlishi? So that's min HaTorah. And Revi is Mekavachomer, and as we just got describing, the Revi comes through a Kavachomer. Shlishi min HaTorah dechtziv, and how do I know that Shlishi is min HaTorah? V'abasar shir yiga b'chol tamei lo ye'achal. So the Gemara says, well, Shlishi, I know because the Torah says that the basar touches anything which is tamei, you're not allowed to eat that meat, milo askinan. What's the case over here? The naga b'sheni. The case over there is where it touched the sheni. Fine. So Revi Mekavachomer kedamrina, and then Revi is a Kavachomer. All right, so now So where do we stand with this argument of Rav Yossi? The argument goes like this. When it comes to Kodesh, when it comes to Karban, the Torah gets us to three, the Kavachomer gets us from three to four. Okay, that's the two-step. Now, the Pasuk itself is not totally clear, meaning the Pasuk that we just quoted, right, the Habasar Asher Yiga B'chol Tameh, it doesn't exactly give us the circumstance, the parameters in which we're discussing. It's Rav Yossi who makes a logical leap, a logical assumption, that Pasuk is describing Mi Lo Askinan. Isn't that case talking about where it touched the Sheni, and therefore the meat now becomes a Shlishi, and the Torah says, don't eat it, Lo Ye'achal. So the Pasuk gets us to a Shlishi, and the Kavachomer, based on the argument of a Mechusar Kippurim, a Mechusar Kippurim who can eat Truma but can't eat Kodesh, so for sure a Shlishi, who is going to disqualify Truma, for sure is going to make a Revi'a Kodesh. Good. So that is all the argument of Rav Yossi. So again, by Karban, how do I know we go 3 to 4? Pasuk gets us to 3, Kavachomer gets us to 4. Good. That's all Shitas Rav Yossi. Now the Gemara points out, Rabbi Akiva cannot subscribe to that position. Meaning there's no way that Rabbi Akiva can apply both the Pasuk and the Kavachomer. Why not? It's very simple. Because Rabbi Akiva says that in the world of Chulin, two is not the cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac becomes three in the world of Chulin. So now, if I'm Rabbi Akiva, so what's the Pasuk going to do? The Pasuk is going to move us from 3 to 4, and the Kavachomer is going to move us from 4 to 5. So that means that according to Rabbi Akiva, our numbers for Kachim is not going to stop at 4, but based on the logic of Rav Yossi, from Chulin, the endpoint is 3. The Pasuk gets you to 4, the Kavachomer gets you to 5. So what the Gemara now is going to point out is that Rabbi Akiva cannot subscribe to this logic of Rabbi Yossi. Gemara says it right now. That's what would come out if Rabbi Akiva subscribed. So that's how we know that Rabbi Yossi cannot go like Rabbi Akiva, and there's no way that Rabbi Yossi's starting point could be 3. Fine.
Three for
Shuma,
4 for
Kodesh.
Everyone agrees to that?
Yes, yes. In fact, the Gemara is going to point out in just a second that, and again, I don't have the encyclopedic knowledge, but the Gemara says you'll never find a Mishnah nor a Braisa that ever uses the numbers 4 and 5. So it's understood that no matter who you are, your endpoints are going to be 3 and 4. 3 for Shuma, 4 for Kodesh. So it must be, it can't be that Rav Yossi agrees with Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva, who ends Chulin at 3, would then jump to 4 and then jump to 5. Okay. So, Ela Rabbi Akiva lo sabla like Rabbi Yossi minalan. Good. So now, that's how I know that Rabbi Yossi can't hold like Rabbi Akiva, but what about the other way? Amalei, delo lishtame tan of a listener revi, b'chum v'chamishi b'korosh, v'neim Rabbi Akiva hi. So, because we don't. What does that mean, we don't? We don't have a Tana. There's simply no Tana out there who says that by Truma it goes to a Revi, by Kodesh it goes to a Chamishi. There simply is no Tana out there, and because there's no Tana out there, meaning had there been a Tana out there, we could have very easily argued, that's Rabbi Akiva, who says 4 and 5. Well, how does Rabbi Akiva get to 4 and 5? Because again, we know that by Chulin his endpoint is 3, that was yesterday's daf. We know then that the Pasuk of Abasar Sheyiga B'chol Tameh would get us to 4, then the Kavachomer of Rabbi Yossi would get us to 5. There's no Tana who says it. Had there been a Tana who said it, I would have said that's Rabbi Akiva. It's evidence by lack of evidence, meaning the fact that there is no Tana that says 4 and 5 speaks to the idea that even Rabbi Akiva stops at 3 and 4. Well, how does he stop at 3 and 4? Must be that he does not subscribe to the logic of Rabbi Yossi. Okay. And for a lengthy discussion, which I will not go through right now, but I encourage, see that long Rashi on the side of the Amud, where Rashi starts off Amalei? So there, Rashi goes through a long discussion in terms of why exactly Rabbi Akiva doesn't subscribe to the logic of Rabbi Yossi. It's based on a series of Gemaras. He quotes a Gemara in Sota, he quotes a Gemara in Chagiga. It's based on a series of Gemaras where Rashi explains to us why exactly Rabbi Akiva doesn't subscribe to the logic of Rabbi Yossi. Fine. Okay, in the meantime, good. Nafak, I'm sorry, v'ana nahachi nekem nismach. Fine. And so, once there's no braisa, so then we're not going to just simply create a shita. Meaning, we're not going to put Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi together on their own, like in a chemistry lab, mix the two together and come out with 4 and 5. We're not going to do that. If we have a brisa to do that, fine. But on our own, we're simply not going to do that. Good. Nafag Rav Ashi v'itamar Rav Kana Dak v'ashka achad nan. So the Gemara quotes now an Amora, not sure which one, either Rav Ashi or Rav Kahana, goes out and finds the following Mishnah. Hakli mitzarif is mashe betoch lekodesh, aval lo letruma. V'harivi bekodesh pasav ha-shlisha betruma. Okay. Hakli's mitzarif. Okay, Rashi explains. This idea of kli being mitzarif. It's an interesting idea. It basically speaks to the following. Let's say I have in a kli different foods. Rashi describes how one food is on one end of the kli and the other food is the other end of the kli. But in other words, they're both enveloped in one utensil. Okay, they're in a bowl. They happen just right now not to be touching one another. And the truth of the matter is, even if they were touching one another, the same point can be made. I then have somebody whose tummy, or an object which is tummy, touch one end of the kli. Or I should say, rather, the food at one end of a kli. So, the Mishnah in Chagiga teaches us that the kli is mitzarif. The kli... Correct. The kli would be mitzarif, means that the kli basically combines everything together that's inside the utensil. Now, Rashi goes on further to explain, let's make this point even stronger. Let's say that which is touching the food in the kli is not an avatoma. Let's even make it a food that's tamei. Okay? So in other words, so the food is tamei that touches the food in the kli. Right, so let's say for argument's sake, say that the food that's touching is a sheni. So that means that the food in the kli is a shlishi. The food at the other end of the kli that's not being touched is also going to be a shlishi. Now Rashi points out, now the kli itself doesn't become tamei. We know that kalim do not become tamei from food. It doesn't happen. So the kli cannot become tamei. So what is it? What is actually creating a unified tumah within the kli? This idea, this concept, that a kli is mitzarif. Basically what a kli does is it takes all the contents of the kli, unifies it, makes it into one item, one holistic item, and so therefore we view it as it was touching everything in the kli. This is a concept of Hakli being mitzarif. So the Mishnah Chagiga says, Hakli mitzarif is mashe betocho lekodesh avalo lechuma. Now this concept is a limited concept. It only applies in the world of kachim. It doesn't apply in the world of truma, and certainly not in the world of chulin. The harivi bekodesh pasol v'ashlishi betruma. And revi, how far do we go to? We go up to a fourth degree in kodesh. I'm sorry, a Kodesh, how far do we go to? We go up to fourth degree. And in Shurma, we go up to third degree. Yeah.
This Kli is not a Kli
Cheres,
right?
No. Right, Rabbi Tushwa, right, because a Kli Cheres, so then the other would be Mitame, and that would mean everything inside as well. Good. So, Shabbatok, Kodesh of Elochum, Varevi, Bekodesh, Pasav, Ashish, Bishom, Bam, Rabbi Chiaber, Abam, Rabbi Yochanan, Meidu, Sosha, Rabbi Akiva, Nishna, is Mishnah, Zu. And we have a tradition that this Mishnah Chagiga comes to us via Rabbi Akiva. So good. So in other words, not only is there a lack of evidence, now there actually is positive evidence that Rabbi Akiva only goes to 3 and 4. Because this we have a Mishnah Chagiga, and we have a tradition that the author of this Mishnah Chagiga is Rabbi Akiva. So it's not just there's a dearth of information, there's an absence of information, but just the opposite. Based on this Mishnah Chagiga, based on our Masorah, that this Mishnah Chagiga is one like Rabbi Akiva, so now we know that Rabbi Akiva cannot subscribe to Rav Yossi. Because if Rabbi Akiva would subscribe to Rav Yossi, applying the Pasuk, then using the Kavachomer, so Rabbi Akiva's numbers would not be 3 and 4, his numbers would be 4 and 5. So by virtue of the fact now that we have a Mishnah that is attributed to Rabbi Akiva, that says 3 and 4, we now know that Rabbi Akiva cannot agree to Rav Yossi, his Talmud, doesn't agree to how he understands that Pasuk, and certainly not the Kavach Chomer as well. Good. The Gemara goes on. And then did not, and we have another Mishnah, host of Rabbi Akiva, meaning Rabbi Akiva would like to add to this list that Hasol Zaktors Valavon Vagachalam Shinaga Tvolyam Bemitzasam Pasol Eskulam. Revi in Chamishi Lo, Shlishi in Revi Lo. Rabbi Kiva is going to add to that list. Well, what is Rabbi Kiva going to add? You have Solas, fine flour, which is inedible, meaning it's in its raw state. Kitores, the incense that is burned in the Mizbech HaZahav, Levona, the frankincense that goes together with the Lechem Aponim, and the Gachalim and Kols. Meaning, now, what do these four items have in common? They're all not edible. Now, solus, by the way, is the closest thing we have to edible, because solus is actual food. It's flour, but it's not cooked.
Is it? But didn't you say that in Kachshim that,
correct. In other words, Tumah Tahara has very set rules. I mean, we've been discussing it now for almost a week. Tumah Tahara has very set rules. And the set rules of Tumah Tahara is that it's only going to be metame food or finished products, a kli. But generally speaking, we do not say that if I have raw material, which isn't the food, so it's not going to become tummy. That's what we generally say. However, in the Beis HaMikdash, anything that's going to go up onto the Mizbeach is going to be susceptible to Tumah. All Rabbi Kiva is doing over here is taking this concept of Tzirf, which we just learned in this Mishnah Chagiga, and applying it even to non-food but Mizbeach items. So if I have an item that's going up onto the Mizbeach, so let's go over our list. Right, the Solas, again, it's food but it's raw. Ketores. Ketores is not food. It's incense that's going to get burned on the base of Mikdash. It's crushed bark and a series of other ingredients as well. Levona is frankincense. That is with the lechem upon him, but not, in other words, there are just two spoons that are placed on the top of the lechem upon him, which at the termination of the week, they're going to be taken off the lechem upon him and burnt on the mizbeach, but it's not a food. And finally, gachalim. Gachalim are coals that are going to go up onto the mizbeach. So again, these are non-food items. Generally speaking, in the world of Tumah Tahara, they are not susceptible to Tumah, but meanwhile, if they're going to go up onto the Mizbech, they're susceptible to Tumah. It's based on a concept Rashi quotes over here. It's called Chibas HaKodesh, right? Literally translated as the love of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning that in the Beis HaMikdash, there are certain chumras that are instituted. I don't know about chumras, maybe status elevations. Meaning that we're going to take a non-food item, but because it's going to go onto the Mizbeach, so it's given status. So status is elevated to a food item. And therefore, it's going to be Mekabel Tumah. Rabbi Kiva is actually going one step further. Not only are they going to be susceptible to Tumah, but if they're in a kli together, and I have something Tameh touching one part of it, it's all going to be Tameh, as Rashi explains. If we didn't have this concept of the kli being Mitzarev, so now, Let's take the ketores, which are kernels, little particles of, again, just ground up spices. So what should happen in the world of Tumah Tahara is that I touch this, this is going to touch this, this is going to touch this, but they're separated particles from one another. So the only way they're going to become tummy is if I subscribe to the idea of chamishi and shishi and shvi, and we don't have that. Meaning kodesh only goes up to a revi, that's it. So the fact that the entire bowl becomes tamei is operating through this concept of tziruf. Because they're in the bowl combines, the bowl unifies, it turns it into one item. And now what Rabbi Akiva is doing is basically he's taking two concepts and putting it together. Concept number one, that anything going on to the Mizbeach is getting an elevated status, it's getting a food-like status, so therefore it can be Mekabel Tumah. Concept number two, the concept of tziruf. That when they're in the bowl unifies and combines it into one. The Gemara is going to discuss whether tziruf is a din daraisa. Chibas HaKodesh, I do not remember. I'm saying.
It seems like
the right, correct. So Chibas HaKodesh, I do not remember if that's a din daraisa, din darabanan. I'm going to guess it's a darabanan, but that's a guess. I don't remember. And the Gemara right now is going to discuss whether tziruf is a din daraisa or a din darabanan. In the meantime, by the way, we're a little bit off the basic point the Gemara is trying to make. The basic point the Gemara is trying to make is, again, that according to Rabbi Akiva, your numbers are 3 and 4. That's really the main point that we wanted to get from all this. But then as bonus, we're going to get a discussion of Chibas HaKodesh and this idea of Tziruf. But the main point is Rabbi Akiva's numbers are 3 and 4. And then, just to say it one more time, before we move on to a new topic, that means that Rabbi Akiva cannot agree with his Talmud Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says, I move a step because of a pasuk, I move another step because of a kal v'chomer. Rabbi Akiva can't do that. Because Rabbi Akiva's starting point by chulin is 3, so he can't jump another step, and then jump another step, because that would get him 4 and 5. Good. So again, point made. The Gemara is finished. Is discussing this issue. So Rabbi Akiva, to a certain degree, cannot subscribe to Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi, to a certain degree, cannot subscribe to Rabbi Akiva. Wonderful. Okay, we're just going to move on to the Gemara now. Alma kasav tziruf derabanan. This idea of tziruf is a din derabanan, not a din daraisa. How did the Gemara arrive at that conclusion? It's very simple. Because if you look back at the Mishnah says, where are we going to apply the principle of tziruf? Oh, in the world of kachim, but not in the world of truma. If tziruf were a din daraisa, so how can we pick and choose? Meaning tziruf is a concept. It means that anything in a bowl is going to be unified. So what difference does it make whether we're talking about carbon or whether we're talking about truma? The fact that we're separating truma from kachim means that we're, because of its limited application, means that this whole concept is a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'raisa. We'll plead to Rabbi Chanin, damar tziruf d'raisa, and Rabbi Chanin argues, and he says that tziruf is a din d'raisa, shenemar kafachas asara zahav malei kataras. Pasuk we get to hear again and again and again. It's in Parshas Naso. Every one of the Nesiim gets this pasuk. So we get to hear this pasuk 12 times. We also, on Hanukkah, we get to hear this pasuk 8 times. So the for the 8 days of Hanukkah. But anyway, but the pasuk kafachas, one spoon, asara zahav, malei kataras. Now, in the spoon, there's kataras. And it's kafachas, it's one spoon. Now, again, the simple pshat is it's one spoon. But what the Gemara is darshaning is that not only is it one spoon, but it's a unifier. That all the kataras, which are grains that are in the spoon, are all going to be combined into one. So kol ma, right, malei kataras, a kasav asa, kol ma shebekaf, achas. Anything in the spoon unifies. Okay, and that ends the discussion of tziruf. So is the concept of tziruf a din d'rabbanan or a din d'oraisa? Machlokes amongst the Amoraim. Okay, and for the rest of today's daf, a Mishnah in Eidos. Okay, I told you now, like the Gemara now is just basically using today, tomorrow, in other words, the last 7 days, is just, it's a great opportunity to talk about Tumah Tahara, something we don't normally do while learning Bavli, Gemara Bavli. So here we are now, afforded such a wonderful opportunity. So now, based on everything we learned, we're going to now be able to hopefully understand a Mishnah in Eidos. The Mishnah is in Eidos, Eidos is found at the end of Nezikin. Eidos are basically testimonies, right? The Gemara in Brachos, it wasn't that long ago we did this, it feels like a long time ago, but about a year ago. The Gemara in Brachos says that Eidos also goes by a nickname. The Masechta of Eidos is called Bechirta, the choice Mishnayos. What makes them so select? So the Gemara in Brachos goes on to explain, because they're testimonies. Meaning, as opposed to the other part of Shas, the other Mishnayos throughout Shas, meaning they're shitos. There are different opinions in terms of Rabbi Meir says this, Rabbi Yossi says this, Rabbi Yehuda says this, they're opinions. But when you get to the Mishnah in Eidos actually gives us not just opinions, but testimony. This is what I saw. This is what happened. So, and the Gemara in Brachos says, and yeah, you're right, it's super credible. And the Gemara in Brachos says that when you have a Mishnah in Eidos, you have to take that really seriously. In other words, it's not just, it's not a shita, which in of itself obviously is very important, but it's not just a shita, but it's an opinion that was put to practice. That's what makes Eidos such a significant masechta. There are very little machloksim in Eidos, but there are some. I mean, again, it's been a while. I've gone through masechta, but it's been a while. But there are, I could definitely remember a couple. Kavya ben Mahalal is over there in that Mishnah Nadius. Anyway, good. That's just a little introduction to the Masechta Nadius. We in the Daf Yomi, we don't learn the Masechta Nadius, right? Once we get to the end of Nezikin, so there are a couple Masechtas over there that don't have Gemara. So in the Daf, we don't learn it. Notably, by the way, Nadius. Notably also Avos, right? We don't learn Perkei Avos in the Daf Yomi. Because it's a Masechta of Mishnayos that's found at the end of Seder Nezikin that's without a Gemara, and therefore we don't learn it. Okay, you've heard me on my spiel before. We do learn Masechtos at the end of Kachim, even though they don't have Gemara. All right, so Kasha on Rabbi Meir Shapiro, in terms of what he decided we're going to learn, what he decided we're not going to learn. Fine. But anyway, Tanan Hasam. Amacha Chenimse Bebasar. Sha'asakim v'ayadayim taharos v'habasar tamei. Nimsa b'perish hakol tahor. The Mishnah in Eidos describes the following. I shecht an animal. in the Beis HaMikdash. And let's assume that the animal that I shecht is a carbon. Okay. And after shechting the animal, we find a needle in the animal. Okay, very common, meaning animals are not that discerning when they eat. So it's very possible that as they're eating the grass off the ground, so they picked up a needle. They swallowed a needle as well, and the needle now is inside their body. So what's the halacha? So the Mishnah in Adio says that if the needle is found in the meat of the animal, so the knife that was used to shecht, and your hands as well are tahor, but the meat itself is going to be tame. Okay, that's part one of the Mishnah. Part two, nimtzes beperish. However, if I find the needle not inside the animal, but in the waste of the animal, in the excrement of the animal, so hakol tahor, everything is going to be tahor. The knife that used to shecht, your hands, and the meat of the animal as well. Okay, all this is going to be further analyzed and discussed. There's many points of Tumah and Tahara to consider over here. First, we're going to finish the Mishnah in Adios. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Zachina Shein Tumas Yadayim B'Mikdash. We're Zalcha. Right? We merited, we're fortunate that there is no Tumas Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, first of all, Tumas Yadayim. Okay? Again, I speak for myself. We're not really that expert in the world of Tumah Tahara. In fact, in my absence, and thank you, Stuart, for covering the daf for the past couple days, but in my absence, so you saw back on Daf Yud Zayin, so Chagai was giving a test, and the Kohanim gave an answer, and Chagai didn't give grades out. I mean, not at least not in the Navi. And the Amoraim are arguing whether they got the test right or wrong. So, and as Rashi pointed out, meaning that's 70 years of not being involved in Tumah Tahara. Okay, so we're now on year 2000, or circa. We're about 2,000 years since not being involved in Tumah Tahara, so we know even less. But fine. But anyway, but there's a basic idea that your hands are tummy, right? Tumas Yadayim. In fact, there's an entire masechta dedicated to the topic of your hands being tummy. Now, when I say your hands are being tummy, that means that has to be the Rabbanan. Midah writes that there's no such thing as part of your body being tummy, the rest of your body being tahor. No such thing. Meaning, in the world of Dal Raisa, says either you're tummy or you're tahor. You as an entire person. Period. But along comes the Chachamim, and the Chachamim imposed, they were gozer tumas yadayim, that your hands are tame. If your hands have not been, if you have not been concentrating over your hands, in other words, you have not exactly, cannot account for exactly where your hands have been at all times. So now with a hesach hadas, your hands now have a tumah. That degree of tumah, it's a low degree of tumah. Your hands, your daim are only a sheni latumah, which means that your hands touch chul and the chul don't become tame. Your hands touch truma, the truma becomes pasul. Your hands touch kodesh, the kodesh becomes tame. Actually, kodesh becomes a shlishi, which then will in turn can make other kodesh tame. Good. Just quick recap of this idea of yadayim. Yadayim is exerid derabbanan. So Rabbi Kiva, that last line of the Mishnah Nadio says has Rabbi Kiva saying zachinu shein tumas yadayim b'mikdash. There is no Tumas Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash, being that Yadayim is only a Din Derabbanan, and generally speaking, what do we do with the Rabbanans of the Beis HaMikdash? They are removed, so therefore there is no Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash. So, I know usually the Gemara doesn't do this. Usually the Gemara goes with the first point, and then hits the last point of the Mishnah, but Venema, the Gemara's first comment on this Mishnah in Adios, Shein Tumas Yadayim V'Kelim B'Mikdash, meaning, just out of curiosity, why does Rabbi Kiva say there's no Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash? Shouldn't Rabbi Kiva say that there's no Yadayim, and also, in addition to that, there's no Kelim as well in the Beis HaMikdash? What does that mean? Kelim? Again, one of the 18 enactments that was made in the edict of Hananiah ben Chizkiya, which is that A, your hands are tame, that's called Yadayim, and B, I mean, there's a lot more than A and B, but B, if I have a kli that comes into contact with a liquid, which is tame, the kli itself is tamei midrabbanan. Okay, we've already entertained this idea before in these last 5 days of our sugya, that all liquids which are tamei are going to be mitamei a kli. Now again, what we've seen and know already a number of times is that doesn't operate min haTorah. A liquid cannot make a kli tamei min haTorah. But the chachamim were stepped in and they made a gzera that when a liquid which is tamei touches a kli, the kli becomes tamei. Midrabbanan, Why did they do that? We already explained a number of times. Because of the secretions of Azav and Azava. Meaning the spit and the urine of Azav and Azava are an avatama. If the spit of a Zav touches a Kli, that becomes that's a Tumah Daraisa, being that the spit is an avatama. So the Chachamim were gozer, all liquids which are Tameh, that comes into contact with a Kli, that the Kli becomes Tameh Midrabanan. So the Gemara just wonders now, when Rabbi Akiva says, Zachinu, we've merited that there's no Tumas Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash, well, why not mention Kelim as well? Meaning, basically, why isn't Rabbi Akiva just simply saying that all the Tumah Derabanans are for outside the Beis HaMikdash, but not in the Beis HaMikdash? I'm Rav Yudah Maravi, Tem Rav Yos, Rabbi Chanini, Yadayim, Kodim, Gzeres, Kelim, Nishno. An attempted first answer, maybe it's a historical point. And that is that maybe the Gzeira Derabanan of Yadayim was already enacted, which is what prompted Rabbi Akiva to say, yeah, but not in the Beis HaMikdash, but Tumas Kelim is simply not instituted yet. So could they? So the Gemara first attempts to give a historical answer. The Gemara says, Va'amarava, V'hatavai Baba Yam Gazru, but it's simply not true. Meaning Yurches Davar, the 18 enactments, rabbinic enactments by Tumah Tahara, were all enacted at the same historical time. When they went up to the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah, where are you going to find Yud Ches Davar? First parak of Shabbos, where the Mishnah alludes to the 18, the Yud Ches Davar, and then the Gemara goes into another lengthy discussion of what the Yud Ches Davar actually is. The Mishnah did not Sefer v'Yadayim v'Tvil Yom v'Aklam v'Kelim Shenitmu b'Mashkin that. Sefer is the Sefer Torah, and Yadam your hands, and Tful Yom, and Oklim, and Kalim that came into contact with Mashkin are all part of Yud Ches Davar. Again, we're not going to go through this right now. You take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Tful Yom. Tful Yom is Yud Ches Davar. That's a rabbinic enactment. What are you talking about? Tful Yom is a Din D'Araisa. So, they took it out. The point is right now is that they were all enacted at the same time. And so now that they were all enacted at the same time, so now again, just we're really picking on one particular point in the Mishnah Adios. Why does the Mishnah Adios say Zachinu? Rabbi Kiva says we merited that there is no Tumas Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash. Why is he talking about Yadayim? Why is he not talking about the other rabbinic enactments? So Ela Merava Hanoch Tumasakin Dafil Bechul and Nami Lamitame. So the reason why is, quite frankly, says the Gemara, he didn't need to, because it's the idea, in other words, because one of the points that Rabbi Kiva, the Mishnah made, is that the knife is not Tameh. The hands are not Tameh, the knife is not Tameh. So the Gemara says, the fact that the knife is not Tameh, that's even outside the Beis HaMikdash, even under rabbinic law, the knife wouldn't become Tameh. Because Mashkim are Mitameh Akli, but Akli is not Mitameh Akli. It's really that simple. Okay, now, so again, okay, so that just deals with a very, that was nitpicky, I mean important, but that was nitpicky. But now we get on to the main point of the Mishnah in Adios. Again, what happened in that Mishnah in Adios? I have a needle that was found inside an animal. So what did the Mishnah say? The hands of the person shechting, which happened to touch the needle. And the knife, let's say it touched the needle as well. They both are tahor, but the meat of the animal is tameh. So what would the obvious question, and what we need to really do to understand that Mishnah Adios is, what happened to the needle? Meaning, needle, right, why assume anything by the needle? So, hai sakin denagim b'mayilem denagim b'basar ha'in ochem tameh kli. Ve'ela denagim b'machat. So, the Gemara says, first of all, let's start off with what we know. The knife touching the meat, that certainly is not going to affect the knife at all. That we understand. What the knife did is it touched the needle, meaning as you were cutting the animal, so you heard metal on metal, and you realize now that the knife touched the needle. That was inside the animal. That was in the buster of the animal. So, the ha'ain kli matame kli. So the Gemara says, okay, but as a basic rule, a kli is not matame kli. A kli can only become tame through an avatoma, and right now we're going to assume the needle's not an avatoma. I understand it could be. Stay tuned, because the Gemara is going to discuss that in just a moment. But our general assumption is that a needle is not an avatama. So why would you think that the knife should become tummy? So hi macha ma'avidate. Inem a safek machat. So the Gemara says maybe that needle was in a state of safek. I don't know. I don't know if the needle came into contact with tumah, didn't come into contact with tumah. The Gemara says if we really don't even know the needle's tumah to begin with, there's no discussion to be had. Va'idmar Rav Elazar, Rav Yosi, Rabbi Chinan, and Chad Amar Lo Gazru, Asafik Arokin Shibur Yishalayim, and Chad Amar Lo Gazru, Asafik HaKelim Shibur Yishalayim. Not that they argue with one another, but I'm walking through the streets of Yerushalayim and I step on spittle. Okay? I don't have to now start wondering, hey, maybe that spittle belongs to a Zav or a Zava. In other words, without any knowledge, I don't assume the worst. It's just spit.
You're using it because of the road there.
Right. And the same thing is true with Kalim in Yerushalayim. Meaning I encounter any clean Yerushalayim, and again, the default assumption is it's fine. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Kagon, Sha'avdala Macha, Tame Meis, V'ikira Babasar. Answer number one, it's not a Safek. In fact, the needle was touched by a Tame Meis. Tame Meis, as we've discussed already a number of times, that's a person who touched human remains. That person's an Avatama. What makes that needle? The needle now also is an avatama. So v'hikiru babasta, and you recognized it within the meat. Rav Yosi, Rabbi Avin, Amar Kigon Shaisa Parachasuma Uva Mechutz Yerushalayim. And the other suggestion is that it was a muzzled animal. Animal did not eat anything in Yerushalayim. So therefore, the origination of that needle started outside Yerushalayim. Where there, we are not as confident that everything is tamei tahor. Okay. Two answers proposed in terms of the what's going on with this needle. The first answer obviously is very difficult, and the Gemara now is going to discuss Gufa. Rav Elazar, Rav Yosi, Rav Chinan, Chanan Amar Lo Gazru, Safek Arokin Shibur Yishalayim. I'm sorry. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. That the needle was touched by Tamei Meis. We'll come back. Gufa, Rav Elazar, Rav Yosi, Bar Chinan, Chanan Amar Lo Gazru, Safek Arokin Shibur Yishalayim, Chanan Amar Lo Gazru, Safek Kelim Shibur Yishalayim. Rokin Tanina, Kelim Tanina. The Gemara notes. I know both of these points. I know both of them based on Mishnayos. Rokin Tanina will have a Mishnah Shkalim. That's our next Masechta. Kol HaRokin Animsim Yishalayim Taharim. Chutz Mishal Shuk HaElyon. There is one market, Shuk HaElyon, where as Rashi points out, that's where all, I don't want to say low lives. They're not low lives. They're just, that's where all the Tamei people hang out. Okay? Don't ask me the geography. I don't know. But anyway, there's a particular place in Yerushalayim where there is a very high concentration of Tamei people. There, you find any secretions. You find spit, you find urine. So there, the default assumption is that that's going to be Tamei. However, the rest of Yerushalayim, you're fine. You find spit, you find any body secretions, it's not Tamei. You don't assume anything. So that's a Mishnah Shkalim. So the Gemara is just simply bothered. So now that I have a Mishnah Shkalim, so now I have a Moraim who's commenting on this. What do I need a Moraim for? I have a Mishnah. So the Gemara says, okay, it could be that the Amara is making one small additional Chiddush. Meaning, the default assumption in Yerushalayim is that I find spit in the street, it's fine. But what if I know that there was a Zav that walked through the street? Okay, is that going to upset anything? So the Amara comes in and says, no, it's not going to upset anything. Meaning, I'm still going to work with the same basic Chazaka, an assumption that spit in the street in Yerushalayim is going to be fine, even if I know that there was a Zav who walked through the street. Fine. Kelim Tanina Dinan Kol HaKelim HaNimtzim Yerushalayim Derech Yerida LeBeis HaTvila Temeim. So the Gemara quotes another Mishnah Shkalim, and the Mishnah Shkalim says, let's say I find a clean Yerushalayim. Generally, I assume the Tahor. In other words, no reason why to assume. Otherwise, again, it's Yerushalayim. Everybody, you're eating karban Yerushalayim, you're eating Meister Shein in Yerushalayim, all right, you can eat truma anywhere. But in other words, the general assumption is that it is tahor. The only time I'm not going to assume that is if I find a kli in a path that leads to a mikvah. Now, I don't fully understand this, but the back then, there was a clear entrance and exit out of a mikvah. Nowadays, most of our mikvahs, the entrance and the exit are the same. So it's kind of hard for us to really picture and envision. But back then, they had an entrance and they had an exit. If I find a kli on the entrance to the mikvah, on the path that leads to the mikvah, so then, obviously it's speculating, but I can make the following general assumption. It means that kli was en route to the mikvah, which means that it was tamei, needed tahara, and for whatever reason, the guy left it there, walked away, forgot. Then, because of the circumstantial evidence, I'll assume that kli is tameh. Otherwise, however, for all other kalim, tahor. That's the Mishnah in Shkalim. Oh, well, hold on a second. You okay? Lebeis atil tamim. How da alma taharin ulo tamechem a seif. And then the Gemara says, okay, but what about the second half of the Mishnah? Shkalim ha derech aliyah taharin. So the Gemara says that if it's on the way up out of the mikvah, meaning someone forgot a kli on the path that goes up from the mikvah. So again, circumstantial evidence. We're going to conjecture that it was tovel in the mikvah, brought up, and for whatever reason the person forgot it, but at the exit of the mikvah, it's going to be tahor. Now, if I read that Mishnah carefully, hada'ama tamein. The diuk is that all other kelim are going to be tamei. Ela reisha dafka v'seif alav dafka. So the Gemara says, okay, the Gemara knows, as a tradition, the first part of the Mishnah Shkalim, that's supposed to be read critically. The second half of the Mishnah is not to be read so critically. Meaning, the first half of the Mishnah says that if the kli is found on the way to the mikvah, so then that is going to, we're going to assume it's tameh. All other kelim throughout all of Yerushalayim are going to be tahor, ula afuke gazyasa, and the only point that we're describing is that if I have a mikvah where there's no clear entrance and exit, kind of like the mikvahs that we have nowadays, so then that kli is in a state of suffix. All right. Anyway, okay. That was all by a side tangent. So again, let's go back to the Mishnah in Adios. What we're going to do today and the beginning of tomorrow is just get a simple understanding of the Mishnah in Adios. Let's repeat the Mishnah in Adios and set ourselves up for a very basic question. You find a needle inside an animal. In other words, you have a carbon. You're shechting the carbon, and as you're cutting the meat of the animal, you hear a clank, and you realize that what happened was is that your knife touched a needle that was contained inside the animal. Now, generally speaking, what do we say? There's nothing to worry about. The needle, if we don't know any information, we're going to assume not the worst, but we'll assume the best. The needle was tahor. You're fine. If, however, I know, for whatever reason, I know that that needle touched a tamei meis, meaning somebody who touched human remains, who himself is an avatuma, so now we have a problem. But the problem is a limited problem, says the Mishnah Adios. The knife is fine. Your hands touch the needle, your hands are fine. Your hands are not tummy. It's only the meat of the animal that's going to be tummy. So says the Mishnah Adios. And now the Gemara is going to ask an obvious question. The Gemara says, we're now in the bottom of Yates Amud Beis, and we'll finish up today with this question and answer. So, Ula Rav Damar Kagon Shavdala Macha Tame Meis. The question's obvious. Look, we have a rule. This is not the first time we're hearing this in our sugya. We have a rule that when you have a cherev, a sword, and a sword doesn't have to literally mean a sword. A sword could just simply be any utensil, and according to the Rambam, any utensil except for kli cheres. If I have any utensil, and it touches a mace, or in this case a tameh mace, it doesn't drop down a level in tumah, remains the same level as tumah. So now I have a needle which I know touched the tameh mace, and the needle finds its way inside of an animal, so everything should be tameh. The meat of the animal should be tameh. Your hands should be tameh. Forget your hands. Your whole body should be tameh. And the kli and the knife that touched the needle as well also should be tameh. So for Rav's suggestion that this needle we know touched the tameh mace, the question is obvious. Why is the meat the only thing that's tummy? It's an obvious question. So Amar Rav Ashi, Zosamer, Azara, Rishos Harabim, he, Bavale Safik Tumma, Rishos Harabim, Vichol Safik Tumma, Rishos Harabim, Sveiko Tahor. So Habir Shos Yachit, Sveiko Tameh. So the Gemara gives a little more context to this whole scenario. Number one, you don't know if the knife touched the needle. Possibly did, possibly didn't. We don't know if your hands touched the needle, possibly did, possibly didn't. So now this is a suffix. Furthermore, what we're also going to argue is that all this is taking place in the temple courtyard. The temple courtyard has a Rishos HaRabim status. Now, we mentioned this point a number of times, but just quickly to reiterate. Rishos HaRabim and Rishos HaYachid are in two different contexts. One is regarding Shabbos, and the other one is regarding Tumah, and they are different definitions. In Shabbos, it's a structural definition. Rishos HaYachid means that walls around you. Rishos HaRabim, street that's 16 amas wide. and more. But I'm just summarizing. When it comes to Rishus Yachid and Rishus Rabbah in the world of Tumah, it's not a structural definition. It's a populace definition. Three's a crowd. Once I have a crowd that's greater than three, that's a Rishus Rabbah. Once it's two, it's a Rishus Yachid, based on Sota. So in other words, it has nothing to do with structure. For the Azara and the rules of Rishus of Safik Tumah, the Azara is a Rishus Harabim. So now, did I touch the needle? Maybe. Did the knife touch the needle? Maybe. This is a Safik. It's occurred in the Azara. It's a Safik Tumah b'Rishus Harabim. What's the halacha? Safik Tumah b'Rishus Harabim is Tahor. Okay. Pause over here. That now, and why the meat should be Tameh, well, that's very easy. Because the meat's not a suffix. Meaning the needle was found in the meat. So we know the needle's in the meat, so that's not a suffix. And so therefore the conclusion is that the meat itself, the animal itself, is going to be Tameh, but you and the knife, which may or may not have touched the needle, so you're going to be Tahor, based on the rules of suffix Tumah b'Rishus Harabim, is going to be Tahor. Okay. Right, and elevate it and make it. So Chibas HaKodesh, it's an interesting concept. I mean, it's very limited. Okay. Pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the from this part of the Mishnah in Adios. A little bit more to finish up this Mishnah in Adios, and one more day of this discussion of Tumah Tahara. And okay, we'll stop over here.